Hi, Patrick here, and the pod today is taking you to New York City, to the East Village. Something about the East Village makes you, well, it's made me anyway, it's made me believe, briefly believe, that words will save the world. Maybe you're having drinks with friends and mapping out a screenplay you haven't written and never will. Or maybe you're at some poetry event thinking, I could do that. Or maybe you're here. This is a reading organized by a group called the Endangered Language Alliance. We've done stories on them before. I'll post links at pri.org/language. Now, their mission is pretty simple, to bring threatened languages to life, not initially in the places where those languages originated, but in New York City, where there are native speakers of who knows how many languages. The idea is that you publicize it, you give the language some respectability, then maybe, just maybe, you can export that respectability back to the home country. Now, at this reading, they're highlighting five of the nearly 800 languages spoken in Indonesia. People, native speakers, they're reading literature, stories written in those languages. And we're going to focus on one of those languages here, Tontonboan. Kukua Indoro Lumimuut Wositoa. It's spoken by somewhere around 100,000 people. And like most disappearing languages, it's not being passed down to younger generations. Here's Bruce Wallace.
The tale of Lumimuut and Toar is, like a lot of creation myths, a strange one. It involves a crow and a perspiring stone, a couple handfuls of dirt magically turning into an island, and two main characters that are part Adam and Eve and part Oedipus. Rosamund Nincha recites a story in Tontonboan, her native language.
Our parents, they speak Tontonboan, but in the school, I didn't learn Tontonboan. In the school, Indonesian language.
Monincha says her Tontonboan-speaking parents actually encouraged her to learn Bahasa Indonesia, the country's national language. Her parents thought it was key to their kids getting a better education than they had. She and her husband both left the 1,000-person village they grew up in, moving first to a provincial capital, then to Jakarta. In the mid-90s, they moved to Queens, an immigrant-rich borough in New York City. They both still understand Tontonboan, but their speaking is a little rusty. The stories they've been asked to read by the Endangered Language Alliance are actually not known today among native speakers. They've been gathering dust in a study put together 100 years ago by a Dutch missionary.
Many of the missionaries had a real authentic interest in the religious beliefs and the spiritual life of the people that they were trying to convert. And ironically, now our only window into that world is through their work.
Daniel Kaufman is a specialist in Indonesian languages and founder of the Endangered Language Alliance. The Dutch study collected tons of information about the Tontonboan language, but since it's written in Dutch, it's been inaccessible to Tontonboan speakers. Kaufman thinks it's high time that linguists start restoring this kind of knowledge to people who still speak these languages.
Many, many people feel that knowledge and history and culture has been taken from them by Western academics and never been returned.
It's particularly fitting that the Monitjas are performing these stories, since the Dutch missionary originally recorded them in the same small village where Rose and her husband were born. Reading through the Tontonboan story and getting ready to perform it on stage brought back strong memories of that village for Rose.
When I'm reading this, I just feel like so close, like I'm there. I'm here, but I'm over there. I'm in my village. I just almost cry because I can, oh my gosh, my dad is passed away already 3 years ago. I just remember him all the time when I hear that because in my ear, he's always calling me, oh, Rose, kumano ko, mayo o, Tontonboan stuff. I love that.
Rose and her husband get together regularly to speak in Tontonboan with other expats in the area, trying to keep the language and memories alive. And they were pleased to discover that their daughter had managed to pick up some. Rose's parents spent a lot of time with him when their daughter was first born. A few years later, her daughter noticed Rose's leg bothering her.
My mom always, her leg is pain, and my dad always says, oh, sumakit kecheiko. That means your leg is painful. You cannot walk. And my daughter say that to me. Oh, you're going to be sumakit kecei, mama. I say, what? And I just say, oh my gosh, she knows that.
Rose said she even bragged on Facebook about performing Tontonboen in New York City. And she got props from her daughter, now 12 years old, after the performance.
She loved that. She said, Mommy, you're doing good. Mommy, nice. I'm so happy.
Rose thanked her daughter, although she didn't say it in Tontonboen. She said it in Indonesian, which her daughter understands better. For The World, I'm Bruce Wallace, New York City.
Okay, let's hear a little bit more now of Bruce's conversation with Daniel Kaufman of the Endangered Language Alliance. And I think this is a wonderful explanation that Daniel Kaufman gives of what his organization does and how that's different in its goals and in its tone from many other endangered language projects. Here goes.
I think it's very important that linguists and researchers and documentarians don't just bottle up their research and put it in an archive. When academics in this area meet with indigenous people and others who may not come from an academic background, the thing that we most often hear is that we don't want our language to be put in a museum. We don't want our language to be put in some faraway digital archive where nobody knows it's there and nobody can access it. We want our language to be passed on, and we want it to be heard. That's what people want. Although academics and linguists are actually trained and best geared towards the thing that they don't want, basically bottling and pickling things, right? I myself am stepping out of my mold because my training is also as a linguist and not as a I don't have a background in literature, I don't have a background in performance or theater, but I think that it's crucial that these languages are heard and performed and seen on stage and amplified, magnified, and that's very difficult to get from an archive or a museum or even a book. So it's an experiment. We're trying to take these languages that are in fact really only spoken in the shadows, both here in New York and back home, and to put them in the spotlight. It's something that so many people want to do. So many people actually love their language and never imagined that anybody else would care about their language. And to be able to have the chance to sing and speak and shout their language on stage is a very positive and liberating thing for the community itself. I can guarantee that if we put this video online and people back in Minahasa see that this Tontonboen text was performed, in a sense, and here in New York, it would have a real effect on them. I mean, I'm not saying that it'll have a change things over there in terms of transmission, but I'm sure it'll get people thinking, because this is a language that's not spoken in public. I mean, many of these languages are just not languages that, in Indonesia, there are languages that people are ashamed to speak in public, just like in so many other parts of the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Tontonboen?
Tontonboen, it's seen as a backwards language. It's seen as like a kind of hillbilly language now. Manado Malay is the cool language, and Tontonboen is the language of, the field. And so when you take this language that's seen as, as now unjustly portrayed as a language of uneducated people and the field, and you put it in New York on stage in a respectable spotlight in a place with nice wallpaper, then it changes the status, or at least it's one small step in the direction of changing its status to something on par with English and Indonesian and all of the other well-respected languages in the world. I didn't go too deeply into how these languages have been pushed out of existence in Indonesia, but suffice it to say that if you're caught speaking these languages, local languages in general in Indonesia, in many places, and even up until now in many places, children are beaten for speaking their language. And that's not true just of Indonesia, that's true of the whole world. I feel it's really a human rights issue that nobody's ever heard of, in a way. But children are routinely beaten in school for speaking their language because that's seen as disobedience. And that's precisely the way that the Native American languages were pushed to the brink of extinction through totally backwards education policies and outright torture of children who tried to keep their culture and just children who naturally kept speaking their home language in a public place. So we're trying to reverse that, that's all. We're just trying to take these languages which have been forced into the home and bringing them out in the street and in public places, make them official languages in our own little way.
Daniel Kaufman of the Endangered Language Alliance. I can't think of a more impassioned and articulate way that you could put across those ideas. And he mentioned a video of the performance. I'll post that at pri.org/language. Otherwise, see you on Facebook at the World in Words page or on Twitter, where I tweet as Patrick Cox, that's PATRICOX. And a big thank you for bearing with the podcast through its recent transition online and on the likes of iTunes. I'm very much hoping that any and all problems have now been smoothed out. And as I say this, my fingers here, they're contorted in a spaghetti junction of crosses. Please let me know if you're having any more problems getting delivery of the podcast. Bye for now.